are listening to Cover Stories, a deep dive into the stories behind iconic album art with Adam Charlie O.
Ian, Bernard, Peter, and Steven were 10 and 11 years old when the cover to their Joy Division's debut album, Unknown Pleasures, was born at Cambridge University. On November 28, 1967, astrophysics student Jocelyn Bell Burnell discovered a strange anomaly. It was an unusual radio signal picked up by an antenna at the Mullard Radio Astronomy Observatory on the outskirts of Cambridge. It turned out to be a radio pulsar, originally named CP-1919. Her supervisor that day was Anthony Hewish, also of Cambridge University. Hewish would later receive the 1974 Nobel Prize in Physics for the discovery. Burnell was not one of the prize's recipients. At the time, she said, "The fact that I was a graduate student and a woman together demoted my standing in terms of receiving a Nobel Prize." She described her discovery like this: "We did not really believe that we had picked up signals from another civilization, but obviously that idea had crossed our minds, and we had no proof that it was an entirely natural radio emission. It's an interesting problem. If one thinks one may have detected life elsewhere in the universe, how does one announce the results responsibly?" As the distant star turned, it emitted electromagnetic radiation waves in a beam, much like a turning lighthouse emits light. These waves can be picked up by radio telescopes. Soon after Burnell's discovery, Harold D. Kraft, Jr., a student of radio astronomy at Cornell University, working at the Arecibo Observatory in Puerto Rico, would diagram these stacked waves from CP-1919. Each line on the image is an individual pulse. They're not exactly the same each time because they travel a long way across the universe and interference gets in the way. The star was briefly called LGM-1 for Little Green Men. It's now called PSR B1919+21. The image that would later appear on the cover of Joy Division's Unknown Pleasures was first published in 1970 by Dr. Harold D. Kraft in his PhD dissertation titled "Radio Observations of the Pulse Profiles and Dispersion Measures of 12 Pulsars." Kraft, recalling the work, said, "I wrote a program that instead of having each line lined up vertically, I tilted them off at a slight angle so that it would look like you were looking up a hillside, which was aesthetically pleasing." While writing up his dissertation, Kraft handed the plots over to a female draftsperson at Cornell University. She filled the lines in with black ink to make them stand out more. The image appeared as a full-page image of the January 1971 issue of Scientific American, volume 224, number 1, as white lines on a field of cyan. The magazine noted, "A pulsar is a rapidly rotating neutron star that emits a radio frequency beam that sweeps through space like a lighthouse beacon. The graphic depicts 80 consecutive pulses. A pulse proceeds from left to right and lasts about 0.04 seconds. Recorded at a frequency of 318 megahertz, these pulses occur every 1.337 seconds with peak intensity near the center of the pulse." Kraft's work created a data visualization that made the leap from student research to pop culture icon. Kraft's image was also reproduced in the Cambridge Encyclopedia of Astronomy in 1977. This is the only album cover I know of that has been the subject of an in-depth Scientific American article. It, like Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, was inspired by an image in an Encyclopedia of Astronomy science textbook. That's enough science for one episode. How did this enigmatic piece of head-scratching astronomy end up on the cover of the debut album of a Manchester post-punk indie band? 2 years after it was published in the encyclopedia, it was found by Bernard Sumner, Joy Division guitarist, who was looking for something neat to put on his new band's first album. Sumner, himself a graphic designer, was working at the Cosgrove Hall Animation Studios in Charlton, Manchester. He said, "On my lunch break, I'd go to the Manchester Central Library and get a sandwich at the cafe. They had a good art section and a good science section. I'd read through the books in search of inspiration. One of the images I found was the Unknown Pleasures image that clicked with me straight away." Let's hit the pause button and chat a bit.
Incoming transmission. Dad, we have a problem. I had no idea how far we'd travel today with our discussion.
Yeah.
So the band that famously released Transmission as their first single in 1979 is also defined by a different sort of transmission, right?
It seems so. It would seem so. Yes, right. Indeed.
Joy Division's Unknown Pleasures. Dig in. We're back in my wheelhouse this week, my friend. So let's get this rolling, shall we?
Let's go.
So Joy Division, a very storied and celebrated band, was once called Warsaw. Later evolved into New Order after the death of their vocalist, Ian Curtis. A favorite of mine, you know, a relatively slim catalog, and they hold a really important place for me emotionally. It's not a terribly bright place,
yeah,
as you can imagine. This is bleak, huh?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, they got their name from, what, a dollhouse or something like that?
It's a lot worse than that.
Yeah.
So it's a lot worse than that. So, you know, the novel, 1955 novel House of Dolls,
there
was written by a Holocaust survivor. And yeah. The Joy Division was a phrase used to describe the sex slavery rings at concentration camps.
Right.
Most notably Auschwitz. You know, for their quote-unquote better-behaved prisoners who were rewarded with and by the Joy Division. So it's dark. So Joy Division has a really cold, austere aesthetic, you know, and a hypnotic and dark minimalism in their music. But you could argue that the cover is every bit as challenging. And sort of a strange thing to become so popular, but we'll tell you more about it. So we're quite used to disputes over album art.
Oh, absolutely.
Whether it's between an artist and the agency or the label.
Yeah, everybody wants a piece of the credit.
Yeah, this one, though, goes a little higher up the food chain, right?
Yes, it does.
The nerd food chain, we'll say. So settle the matter, Dad, because I'm neither a science whiz, and I certainly don't have a PhD in any of this. But I can imagine that sexism was rampant in the world of academia.
Oh, absolutely. You get a professor with a name and a female student in a field that men have populated forever. She's non-existent.
Yeah.
And she was. Jocelyn was non-existent.
Yeah.
Especially when it came time to pick up the Nobel Prize.
I was going to say, this is sort of the predecessor to Blink-182, violating the Geneva Convention. Things that we never thought we'd discuss when talking about album art.
Yeah.
But here we are. So no credit for Jocelyn and the Nobel Prize. And who knows what that speech was like, but it didn't have her name in it. So of all my Achilles heels, of which there are many, science would be up there. Probably just a lack of attention paid through most of my school days. And, you know, seeing as you're the official academic of the pod.
Uh-oh.
That's right. It's,
I don't like the way this is turning.
Heavy as the crown. Give me the elevator pitch on exactly what the hell I'm looking at. I'm still a bit shaky.
Okay, well, that's not too hard.
Okay.
So this is a radio signal. It's like the voice prints, you know, that we're sitting here in a podcast and we can see our voice prints, appearing as we speak.
Sure.
So the star, it turns out in space, and about every 1.3 seconds, it sends out a radio message, and it lasts for about 0.04 seconds. And it has a shape, just like the shapes that we're looking at now.
Certainly.
And so if you get those shapes and you cut them up, you know, into little segments, and then instead of having them run continuously, you know, horizontally across the page, if you cut them up into little 0.04 second snippets, and then you just stack one behind the other, that's what it looks like.
Okay.
And so, that's where the Unknown Pleasures comes from.
It's so funny because I'd always wrongly assume that this was just a, you know, some hipster minimalism sort of thing, or you know, like a sketchy rendering of mountains.
That's absolutely what I thought when I first
or
saw just, it.
Yeah, or cardiogram. You know, and I think that's where people typically go to. So I was actually kind of shocked to find out it was more.
Yeah.
Now,
green men, little green men.
Yeah, that's right, little green men sending us signals. So Bernard Sumner, the band guitarist, he basically stumbles on this on his lunch break, right?
Well, got to give him credit for more than stumbling on it. He was looking for something.
Looking for something,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, he was looking for something for their first band, and he'd go over to the Manchester Library, I think it was, and thumb through the books, and he saw this and said, hey, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a neat discovery, but, you know, any chance that an illustration from the universally lauded Principles of Risk Analysis?
Oh, my. I wish you hadn't mentioned that.
Will ever yield on cover?
Now we're going to have a run on that textbook, and and the royalties are going to push me into another tax bracket. Let's erase that. We'll go back and erase that.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Jokes aside, though, this is the second time that we've had an image from a textbook become the inspiration for one of the most iconic images in the history of recorded music.
Yeah. When you think about it, if you pick two album covers... Yeah, I think, these two are it.
Yeah, Joy Division and Pink Floyd, man. It's wild. So we'll get more into the ins and outs on part two.
Okay, see you there.
When Joy Division were ready to release their debut album with Tony Wilson's Factory Records in the summer of 1979, they went to Peter Saville, the label's in-house designer, to pitch the graphic for their album. Saville was 22 years old, fresh out of college, full of piss and vinegar, and ready for any opportunity that presented itself in his new job. He said, "At that age, no one was asking me to redesign the transit system, but somebody asked me to do a record cover. So I did a record cover the way I wanted. Not just the way I wanted a record cover to be, but the way I wanted everything to be." The band brought the image of the Pulsar to Saville to rework as the art they wanted for the cover. Saville said, "As pretty much with all groups with their first release, Joy Division knew what they wanted on the cover. This was the first and only time that the band gave me something that they'd like for a cover. I went to see Rob Gretton, who managed them, and he gave me a folder of material which contained the wave image from the Cambridge Encyclopedia of Astronomy. They gave me the title, too. But I didn't hear the album. The wave pattern was so appropriate. It was from CP 1919, the first Pulsar. So it's likely that the graph emanated from Joe Drell Bank, which is local to Manchester and Joy Division." They also presented another enigmatic image of a hand emerging from behind a shadowy door, which was taken from a 1970 book of photos by Ralph Gibson, called The Somnambulist. This image, a well-known photograph titled Hand Through a Doorway, appeared on the inner sleeve of the album. Wisely, the band went with the Pulsar for the cover. Saville said the band very astutely spotted this image as potentially a wonderfully enigmatic symbol for a record cover. Saville continued, "They said, we'd like it to be white on the outside and black on the inside. I took these elements away and put it together to the best of my ability. No one said what size or where. I had to figure out how." Speaking of the image, he continued, "It's both technical and sensual. It's tight, like Stephen Morris's drumming, but it's also fluid. Lots of people think it's a heartbeat." Having the title on the front just didn't seem necessary. I asked Rob about it, and between us, we felt it wasn't a cool thing to do. It was the post-punk moment, and we were against overblown stardom. The band didn't want to be pop stars. The cover of Unknown Pleasures rode entirely on a small, mysterious data display, printed in white on black. There was no band name, no album title, no photo of the band members or other identifiers. An interesting and not unfamiliar move for a debut studio album. Neither was there any explanation on the album cover that people holding the record in their hands were looking at. It was a mystery. Saville added, "I contradicted the band's instructions and made it black on the outside and white on the inside, which I felt had more presence. It was called Unknown Pleasures, so I thought the more this could be an enigmatic black thing, the more it might evoke the title. The cover sends out a bleak existential message, which looks exactly the way the album sounds. The music of Joy Division was raised to mythologic levels by singer Ian Curtis's suicide on May 18, 1980. But the music was surpassed in terms of ubiquity, if not necessarily influence, by the album art. Kraft, creator of the graphic, when asked how he felt about its selection, said it came as a complete surprise to him. He didn't know anything about it. A Cornell colleague in the Space Sciences Department, Jim Cordes, a professor of astronomy and a longtime friend of Kraft's, saw him on the street and said, "Oh, by the way, did you know that your image is on the cover of Joy Division?" And Kraft said he had no clue. He added, "So I went to the record store, and son of a gun, there it was. So I bought an album, and then there was a poster that I had of it. So I bought one of those too, just for no particular reason, except that it's my image, and I ought to have a copy of it." You think? It's been on t-shirts, it's been on posters, it's even been on trainers and baby grows. It's been paid tribute to, parodied, remixed, and remodeled. What he should have had was a piece of the merchandising action. Another story that's not unfamiliar. An air of mystery grew up around the Unknown Pleasures cover. What did the enigmatic waveform symbolize? Was it a heartbeat? Was it a mathematical analysis of something sinister? A Fourier series? Was it the cosmic scream of a dying star? Or was it just the sound wave of those terrifying synthetic drums that overwhelmed the track Insight? So this image, perceived as so simple, is not really simple at all, but the result of astronomical readings that led in part to humanity's understanding of this one component of the cosmos. Heavy. Who knew Joy Division was into data visualization before it was even a thing? Let's hit the pause button and chat a bit.
So Factory Records and post-punk, how much did you know about either one of those things going in?
Only what I found out looking up this album.
Okay, fair.
Post-punk is not my wheelhouse.
No, understood. It will be soon. We'll be coming back to it,
Let's go. Educate me.
So Factory Records, we have Tony Wilson and Peter Saville.
Okay.
Wildly inventive. You know, Tony Wilson, the start of the label, Peter Saville, the in-house artist guy.
Yeah.
You know, so aside from introducing the world to Joy Division, the Happy Mondays, and the post-Joy Division group New Order, they were always ahead of the curve visually. You know, Seville was intentionally oblique and pretentious. There's a killer movie about this called 24-Hour Party People from 02 that's really worth seeking out if you haven't caught that one, listeners. But so even trying to flip through the record label's catalog is a trying experience. They've assigned label numbers, or they've assigned release numbers to, you know, a lawsuit, to a hair salon, to things that aren't even you know, records. You know, so very challenging couple of dudes. You know.
Yeah.
But in the final tribute to Tony Wilson was one of the weirdest headstones you'll ever see, designed by, you guessed it, Peter Saville.
All right.
You know, Die As You Lived. It's a cool quick Google search, but his headstone's pretty wild. Now, post-punk, you know, it was retroactively named this. No one was calling themselves post-punk. I think it was, you know, Joy Division would have likely called themselves a punk band.
Yeah.
It was only a year or so after the original punk explosion. But it was a lot headier, a bit more angular musically, and it stressed minimalism and restraint over the fury of punk. You know, so you have bands like Joy Division and Gang of Four.
I can even understand that.
So it's, you know, it's more attached to artistic movements, literature, philosophy. And for our purposes, academia.
Yeah.
You know, so the textbook makes sense. Now, the picture itself, the album art, is this the most minimalist album cover you think we've ever discussed? Thus far, we've discussed.
Well, you know, we're looking for album covers that are a little bit more interesting. So that's a good question. And I think maybe, as a matter of fact, I think it dropped today. We had the Beatles' White Album.
We sure did.
That was pretty minimalist.
I was going to bring that up, but even that one sported letters in the front.
That's true. It's true. There was some language. There was an attempt to communicate.
A fake little stamp here. Yeah. You're buying something that's so limited.
Yeah.
But you noted in your research that it was very intentional to leave off the band name
and
the album title, which is something we've come across.
No pictures, no band name, no title.
Nothing. Very Spartan. In the past, we've seen that from the likes of the Rolling Stones and, you know, the aforementioned Beatles. But for Joy Division, it feels very different to me. It feels like a punk ethos, reactionary sort of thing. What are your thoughts on that?
Well,
this is their first album. No one knows who they are.
The Stones, I think, was kind of a marketing ploy. This feels more to me like a, not exactly an FU, but in that vein, it's like, we don't care. It wasn't, you know, in your face, or, you know, it wasn't an FU in that sense. It was just like, it doesn't matter to us.
Yeah.
if you know us, if you like us, if you buy this, or, you know, that's the way it kind of struck me.
Yeah. It didn't seem like they were, you know, we've talked about this, but they weren't preoccupied with marketing or what's this going to look like in a shop window, you know, the irony there. But
they didn't care about being big.
No, they didn't.
And it's a good thing they didn't.
Yeah, you're not kidding. But it's a part of that uniquely British art school pretension that that worked so well for them. It made them impenetrable and cryptic. And I think that's exactly what they were going for. You know?
Yeah. Actually, when I hear you explain it that way, that feels very British.
It does. So this is perhaps a silly analogy, certainly a silly segue, but let it play out. You know how some dog owners end up looking like their dogs? You know, I'm not sure if this album sounds like the cover or the cover looks like the way the album sounds, but it's a perfect match, one that I've rarely seen. And you called it, you know, in your research, I really like, you called it both bleak and existential, which is spot on, but it goes deeper than that for me. I'd imagine we may meet these gentlemen later, but a more modern analog, though not so sonically similar, Radiohead, I think, pulls off a similar magic trick with their music as Joy Division does. You know, it's at once cold, clinical, and kind of alien, but at the same time, it's really organic, emotional, and rooted in the human condition. Sadly, that condition wasn't necessarily a good one, you know, for Ian Curtis with both his health issues.
Yeah, so I've learned since... Looking into this album.
Yeah, dark stuff, but brilliant, brilliant record. Now, we've talked, you know, at length a few times about people who were not compensated properly, and I'm not getting into copyright here.
We might move him to the front of the line.
He is no question top of the heap here.
Yeah, absolutely. Proud. Yeah, I mean, he had to buy the album himself.
Yes,
he bought an album. He bought a poster.
He didn't even get a free pressing, man.
Come on, man.
So it's nigh on impossible to know this. But I think it's probably the most reproduced and bootlegged image in the history of music.
I'll bet you there are barristers in the UK who would love to take on his case.
Oh, very, very likely. So, I mean, this is the sort of image that has graced T-shirts of celebrities that have likely never heard a lick of this album or have never heard the phrase Joy Division.
Mickey Mouse wore it.
Yeah, that's right. So I can't imagine how much money this guy's going to make out. All right, ground control to Major Adam and Charlie. We'll see you next time.
Next time.
Mark Cummins.